This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it may not be the teams you thought were going to be in the Sweet 16, but there are teams you knew were going to be there. But here is how the Sweet 16 breaks up into the conferences and the teams within those conferences that are still alive in the NCAA tournament. The Big 12 has three teams. It has Texas Tech, it has Kansas, and it has Iowa State, a team that won two games all of last year and are now just a few wins away from going to the Final Four. The ACC, which did not have a particularly good year as a whole, has three teams remaining in this tournament. They have Duke, they have North Carolina, and they have Miami. The Big Ten, who loaded this bracket with teams, now has just two teams left. The Big Ten has Purdue, and they have Michigan. The Big East with two, that is Providence and Villanova. Two teams have played great basketball against each other this season. The Pac-12, two teams left. Arizona, a number one overall seed, and UCLA, a team that went to the Final Four last year. The SEC, which had a loaded group of teams coming in. The SEC had good basketball teams this season. But Kentucky, Tennessee, Auburn, they all went bye-bye. Arkansas is remaining. The Razorbacks are in the Sweet 16. The American Conference only won its tournament champion. That's the Houston Cougars. WCC only won. The team that's always there from that conference, that is Gonzaga. And then the MAAC. Oh, yes, the Mid-American Athletic Conference, and that is St. Peter's. Those are the 16 teams that are in the NCAA Sweet 16 for you to kind of process on Thursday and Friday. Now, again, part of this tournament is picking the teams that can get through the first couple of rounds unscathed. It's very difficult to do. Everyone's got to have a pick a upset or two in their bracket. It's finding the right one. But I still believe, if you have a Final Four, that way you add up the seeding, it keeps you around 8 or 9. I still think in the end that's going to work. It's always fun the first two rounds, right? But really, this is where good teams start separating a bit. The Gonzagas, the Arizonas, the Dukes of the world start separating from the pack. Kansases start separating from the pack. And go and get to New Orleans for the Final Four. More on that as we continue as a Wake Up Call. We will be talking to Mike Rutherford, Card Chronicle. We had talked to him about college hoops, and we'll get his thoughts where the tournament is. It's all coming up this hour.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So again, going over the weekend that was in the NCAA tournament as I broke down the 16 teams and the conferences they come from. Of course, there is a surprise. Of course, St. Peter's is a surprise. Of course, there are others. I expected more SEC schools, right? I'm a little surprised that the ACC, which was down, has more than just Duke still kicking around. I thought the Big Ten would be having more than just two teams. And one of those teams being Michigan is a little surprising, too. I mean, Michigan was a team that was on the bubble this season. They went into the they had the Juwan Howard suspension, right? I mean, they're a team that, you know, you would look at and go, hey, that's a team that has probably got some, you know, some flaws enough to not think they would get to the Sweet 16. But anything is pretty much wide open. But as I said at the top of the hour, I think it is now time where there's a reset. And this reset occurs where lower seeds, I mean, teams that are like really surprised to be here, have a really hard time at getting past, let's say, to an Elite Eight level. It's why many of them don't. Because this is now where the really good basketball teams that have made it this far are going to start to shine. So You could find a 6 in here, you could find a 5 in here, but if you're a 10, if you're an 11, if you're a 15, it's very unlikely that you're going to go to New Orleans. But that's the beauty of it. You never know. You got two wins. You know, you're two wins away. But it's an awful lot to, you know, climb all the way through to get to your region, even though, as I said earlier, St. Peter's beating Kentucky, that's the toughest game, theoretically, that they have en route to winning the whole thing, right? I mean, you know, outside of, you know, because I think the number one seed out of that region is now out. So that being said, St. Peter's, these games should be easier just based on what the seeding tells us, but we know that's not necessarily true. I do think that one thing we have to remind ourselves when it comes to this tournament, this is more of a larger picture question, is there's always been sort of this group of fans. Every year you hear them kind of make a little noise where they say, hey, the winners of these conference tournaments, they shouldn't be anywhere near this thing if you're not one of the top 68 teams in college basketball. We've got so many rankings now, you know, KenPom, the net. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that we get a real deep look into where everybody is in college basketball. And maybe, just maybe, the committee should be looking at whether or not you're one of the 68 best, right? And again, legit, if you are, you know, if you're really into the idea that the best of the best of the best of the best should be in the postseason. But this tournament is not about the best of the best of the best of the best. It never has been. If you want a St. Peter's story, if you want an Oral Roberts level story or a Florida Gulf Coast level story, this is the thing for you. This is the way it's put together. That's the way you should want it and want to keep it, right? And while I understand, you know, hey, look, in the NBA, we don't, you know, we don't say, all right, these teams make the playoffs, but hey, if you're one of the smaller, worst teams, there's a way to get in. Like, we just go, too bad, you're not in. That's just the way it goes. College football, they don't even want to entertain the fifth best team in college football. they're just like, four, and that's it. And you know who you are every single year, wink, wink. But college basketball has always played this game because it's a very niche sport that has a tremendous postseason following. College athletics at its core is very local, very local. Right? And in order to play up the multi-billion dollar, you know, angle of this tournament, it has to be something that sort of draws everybody in, even people who are on the outside, right? I always thought the best thing that ever happened to this was the ability to create brackets, the ability to fill in brackets, and the ability of America to look at office pools and other pools that are technically gambling in states that didn't allow gambling to thrive, right? Because, again, it's a tournament to determine the champion of college basketball, but it's so unique in its design as to welcome in everybody into the fun. And then once you establish what you are, right, which is, hey, we're a wild tournament that's going to have 32 games over the first 2 days. We're going to play 16 of them all day Thursday and all day Friday, and then 8 on Saturday and 8 on Sunday. And you never know what's going to happen. There's an appeal to that, to the casual sports fan that gravitates towards this. And if you watched any of the games this weekend, you see the real money that's attached to this, right? When Greg Gumbel is going Lily at the Madness and it's an AT&T commercial, you know how invested all of these companies are into this exact thing. They're not pegging a bunch of college basketball fans. That's not the reach. The reach is never the diehard guy that knows that, you know, subscribes to KenPom or even knows, you know, that, you know, Gonzaga had a tough game against St. Mary's in early February, or that so-and-so from St. Peter's was a walk-on, or this kid transferred into Miami and he's just started at point guard over the last five games and has done magnificent. Those guys are already in. They're not after them. They're after people like, for example, my wife, who will sit and watch a college basketball game with me just because it's the biggest thing on in the country. She doesn't break away from it going, eh, it's college basketball. I don't even know who's playing. I don't even know these guys. Because she never knows what she's going to see. St. Peter's beating a Kentucky is attractive even to the non-sports fan. You take somebody who's not watched 10 seconds of college basketball, if they have any semblance of athletic competition, they can see that and go, that's a huge deal, isn't it? And you can say, yeah, it is. And they can say, I know that. And you know why I know that? Because even though I don't follow college basketball, somehow, some way, through just general pop culture, sort of general knowledge osmosis into my brain, I know Kentucky is good at basketball. There's something about that I know. And I don't even know St. Peter's. And they've got a 15 next to their name. So this, them beating Kentucky, that's got to be a big deal. There's an attractiveness that draws people to that. And that's what makes it exciting. But it's not exciting. I'm telling you right now, it will not be the same level of excitement if you throw the 68 best basketball teams into this thing. It won't. I know the Cinderella term gets kind of overused a lot, and I kind of understand it. You know, I understand what they're talking about. But the reality of it is there's the attractiveness of that makes this machine go. And that machine isn't to give you the best college basketball champion. That's gone. That never was the intent of this from the very beginning. I've always told you guys that the two major college sports, and you want to throw baseball in here too? I'll throw baseball in here as well. The three major college athletic programs, the sports that we have in this country, two of them, of the top three, two of them are hell-bent determined to give you the best champion it can. You ever follow college baseball's postseason? It's impossible to win the College World Series. It's amazing teams do it. There has to be one every year. It's impossible. If you are selected to that thing, you host a super regional. If you get out of that, you host a super regional. If you get out of that, you go to Omaha as one of eight teams, and then you're in a double elimination tournament to win. There is so many layers to make sure the best of the best of the best advance. As we talk about in college football all the time, they only want four teams competing. And anytime anybody ever brings up the possibility that there could be eight, one of the arguments against it is, let's be honest, there's not really eight teams that are worthy of being a national champion of this sport. College basketball couldn't care less if St. Peter's wins the whole thing. They won't feel robbed about it. They won't feel lessened by it. They won't feel like it was some sort of, you know, thing they got to fix. Like, oh, we got to get back to the drawing board. This can never happen again. They don't care. The money is never in the end result for this thing. The money isn't in to you seeing who is crowned the number one team when it's all said and done. The money is in the craziness of everything that goes on in the first two rounds of this tournament. That's where the money is. Most people who are just casual college basketball fans, and I don't mean you, me, Ron, the people who are watching this thing to the very end. Most people who participate in office pools lose interest in this thing after Sunday. Yeah, Thursday and Friday, they might be like, oh, I might still be in it. But most of the people who are attracted to this thing disappear by the time we get to Saturday and Sunday, when we get to the Elite Eight. And by the time we get to the Final Four, most of the casual fans are gone. The money of this thing, the billion-dollar machine, is the St. Mary's of the world upsetting, the possibility of seeing Gonzaga go down in overtime or whatever. It draws the most eyeballs, but the real sport of it happens now. We're down to 16 teams. Most of them are excellent. Most of them had great seasons that are worthy of being a champion. Sure, we're missing a lot, but we've also got a few that are on that list. But that's why a 68-team top 60 doesn't work. Because a St. Peter's or an Oral Roberts, they wouldn't be there. They wouldn't be part of this. And they have to be part of this case, just in case one of them does what the Peacocks did and then makes people go, man, this is crazy. This is crazy. In fact, it's madness. Isn't that funny? And that's why, again, I've always appreciated the NCAA College Basketball Division I tournament for being exactly what it is. As far as crowning a champion, it makes no sense. As far as being as entertaining and thrilling and controversial and generating topics and stories makes perfect sense. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Again, we'll be talking to Mike Rutherford, Card Chronicle, covers Louisville, but overall college basketball, and get his thoughts on the Sweet 16 as we roll along on a Monday on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call. Again, we'll talk more on the college basketball tournament, the teams that are left coming up with Mike Rutherford. I cannot tell you, Ron, how devastatingly sad I was to hear the news that John Clayton had passed away.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I feel like that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was ill.
Yeah.
John Clayton is just, you know, I told you guys a couple of times, with guys like Dick Vitale and others who cover one sport, they're known for covering that one sport. They're beat. If you show me how much you love it, I'm always going to respect it. And John Clayton loved football.
Yes.
He loved football. He loved the league. He loved being part of a group of reporters that could get any story and could break that story to you, could give that story to you. He wanted to share what he knew about this sport to a fan base or any group, anybody, whether it's fan of the league or the fan of the individual team he was reporting on, that bit of information. And he was the nicest guy I have ever met who had that level of notoriety and fame.
True story.
I mean, he just really was a class act.
They say I got to speak with him a lot when I worked with our friend Sean Salisbury.
Right, sure.
And
they were Sean, very good friends.
Sean had him on once a week. Yep. And so there were always times, and usually carried him over for two segments. So I'd, you know, chit chat with him a little bit and just talk football with him. But yeah, that was literally the first person I saw everyone doing tributes. And I was like, I'm very curious to see what Sean has to say because I know how close they were. And they used to do that play that, you know, that fake fighting
thing
where they just argue with each other, just to argue with each other. And then as soon as you would hear them off air together, it was like they were just laughing and joking, like, oh, I can't believe you went that route.
Right.
But
yeah, and it was 67 is just too young.
It's too young.
Just too young.
And I was happy to see this because I am a full agreement. I don't know if it's my favorite Sports Center commercial, but that's definitely in the top three of all time.
He was in the metalhead one. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the whole joke.
That's the whole joke.
I mean, you know, if you've ever saw him on with Dan Patrick would talk about it all the time. It's like, yeah, he's got a long ponytail. You know, and it's the how many licks to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop. The world may never know.
Right.
You know, whether or not he had a ponytail or not.
I saw him at Bronco games for the 10 years that I covered. And there was sort of my partner at the game. We used to do him and I, we would do those services, you know, where we would call and give updates on games. And him and I we did this for like 10 years. And the guy that was, did it, his name is Lee. He really knew John really, really well. So when I was young and I was just starting, I met John through Lee. And then John would always stop by our area of the press box every time he was in town for whatever reason. And he'd talk to Lee, and then he got to know me pretty well. And I'll tell this story. When I was in Colorado Springs, I went to dinner with my general manager and my program director. And we were having dinner at this restaurant. And our waitress was really nice. And she mentioned to us that she was interested in sports radio. And my general manager said, oh, that's funny that you mentioned that, because this is Tony. He hosts our morning show at the Sports Animal, whatnot. And she's like, are you in school? She's like, yeah, I'm taking some classes at the local class. You know, we should arrange for an internship. And I was like, yeah, that would be great. You know, and I said, it's pretty early. And she's like, oh, it'll be perfect for me because I work here. I definitely could come in. So me and my co-host had her in, and her name was Maura. And she was great. I mean, she was really, you know, she was learning. She was really just great. And she was a great intern. And she graduated, and she kind of disappeared, went on as interns do. And I borrowed Anchorman, the DVD from her, and never returned it. So I always had it in my library and was like, I was supposed to give this back to Maura, and I never gave this back to Maura. I don't even know where she is. She was just an intern. It's like 2004, 2006. A couple years ago, I'm in Atlanta. I'm walking through around, and I hear my name called, and I turn, and it's Maura. She's made it in the business. I ask her what she's doing. I said, what? How? Where are you? How? Tell me. I was like, I was flabbergasted. She goes, I'm John Clayton's producer. And my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe it. I was like, that's incredible. She goes, I live in Seattle. I'm John Clayton's producer. And so I saw John later, and I said, I heard you hired Maura. I said, she was my intern in Colorado Springs. And he just could not stop talking about how great she was. Just great intern. Fantastic. You know, all that stuff. And I remember I told her afterwards, we met up later, and I said, you made it. I said, not only did you make it, you landed with the right person. You love the NFL. That was the one thing she loved. She loved football. She wanted to be like Mina Kimes. She wanted to be like a reporter for the NFL. She liked the other sports. She loved baseball and stuff. But the NFL was where that was her passion. I said, you landed the right guy. I said, you know this. You landed the right guy. And it was just it really warmed my heart that she got to work with him. And he couldn't rave about her enough. And she was one of the first people I thought of when I saw that he had passed away was, oh God, she must've been just devastated because he meant so much to her. But then through her on Twitter and Facebook were a number of people that were telling similar stories about John Clayton. Like I had just started, I was brand new, and John knew my name and he knew my wife's name and he knew that I liked this or like that. Like he remembered stuff. He loved his wife, Pat, and his wife, Pat, was sick, and he loved his wife. But again, I go back to that one thing is that, again, it's very hard in this business sometimes to be known for one thing, you know, like that you do really, really well. But what makes you stand out is how much passion you have for the thing you cover, and that was John Clayton. You could see it in the athletes that would talk to him, that would see him and talk to him. Like he had a level of fame and notoriety that made athletes like, hey, man, that's the guy I got to go talk to. Like, that's, you know, that's John Clayton. I was really sad by that, man. I was really sad.
Really, just really shocking.
It really came out of nowhere, right? I mean, you're right. I mean, I didn't even know he was ill, you know. And then it was, I don't know, it's just one of those stories. Like, Friday night, I'm just going on the internet, and it pops up, and it just
Yeah, showed it was
you.
Trending, and I was like, well, what's this? And yeah, then I saw somebody, it was another friend of mine posted a photo of herself with him and, you know, said, you know, he was, you know, one of the greatest of all time. And I was, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, you know, you ran into him. How cool is that?
Right, right, yeah.
And then, you know, then I see somebody else, you know, saying, rest in peace. I was like, wait, what happened?
Right.
What's going on?
Then
you saw all the tributes. And you're just like, man, when did this happen?
Yeah, and it's kind of sad. I know, you know, we lose some media members throughout our time. You and I have talked about some of the media people that we know, the kind of more upper echelon media people that we know. But I think John Clayton is so well known amongst football fans because of, again, his reporting and his enthusiasm for the sport and whatnot, that I think a lot of people felt that way. Like I posted it on Facebook and I had a lot of people say, oh my God, I can't believe it. That's so sad. Because there was a relationship that they had. They liked the NFL enough to listen to what he had to say. And when he was on TV, it was must-watch TV. Whenever he was doing a hit, it was a big deal. Like, what was he breaking? What was he talking about? He was like Adam Schefter. He was like a lot of them that had news. He had news, or he had analysis of that news that was important for you. You would want to listen to it.
Believe me, I didn't even know he was based in Seattle for the longest time.
Yeah,
I thought he was based in Bristol, Connecticut.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, rest in peace, John Clayton. There's very few that are going to be like you. Because you know why? And I hate to say it, but as your fame increases, your niceness tends to go the other direction. John Clayton always made sure that as his fame rose, his niceness was even elevated higher than that. No matter where he was, he gave time to everybody. He talked to everybody. He would listen to you chat, and he would hate to break away from you if he had to. That's what I always remember about John Clayton.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports. Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, looking at Zeg with Mike Rutherford, current Chronicle on the NCAA tournament. The Sweet 16, some thoughts on the first two rounds of the tournament. I like Duke, the way they played in that last part against Michigan State. The one thing that I will say is just every game about Duke is going to be this special Coach K thing, because you never know when that moment is going to come when they lose and it is all over. And that's it. The long-time staple of this tournament is going to be out. And, boy, it looked like Michigan State could be the team that did it. But in the end, Duke prevails in advancing to yet another Sweet 16. Mike Rutherford joining us on a Progressive Guest Line. Card Chronicle, talk NCAA tournament and where we're at right now with 16 teams left. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. All right, let's get, before we get to some of the little funner upsets, let's get to the top seeds. We saw Arizona need overtime against TCU. Gonzaga's looked a little bit shaky. Of the teams that are of the top seeds, are there anyone that makes you a little nervous, or is that something that we just expect in this tournament at times?
They're all making me nervous right now, to be quite frank. I mean, there wasn't a top seed that really didn't get pushed at some point over the weekend. Gonzaga was on the ropes. Arizona late last night was certainly on the ropes. And that's kind of the case when you have a season like this, where it never appeared like there was a clearly dominant top tier. I know a lot of people said coming into the tournament it felt like it was maybe Gonzaga and Arizona and then a steep drop below them. And I never really bought into that being the case. And you've seen that reflected in the opening weekend. I think it was statistically the fifth biggest upset weekend if you're looking at the total of the number of seeds remaining here going into the Sweet 16. So this is kind of what you expected. Kansas also not exactly breezing past the shorthanded Creighton team on Saturday. There's nothing remaining in this tournament that should surprise anybody, including, you know, all three number one seeds going out before the Final Four.
Yeah, I was going to ask that coming up. It's like, how much of this, I mean, right, this is the fun St. Peter story, but overall, given the way the college basketball season played out, how much of what we have left is really shocking?
Yeah, I mean, shocking is a strong word for any of this. I mean, surprising, sure. I mean, St. Peter's being still around is certainly shocking, especially when you look at their offensive profile coming into this tournament. They were, I mean, there was a case to be made that St. Peter's shouldn't have even been a 15 seed and that they were overseeded as a 15, and now here they are with two really impressive performances. But outside of that, I mean, the SEC's performance has been surprising, certainly, only yeah. Sending Arkansas to the Sweet 16. I guess the ACC also is surprising in the other vein, them being so down all season long and then almost sending four teams to the Sweet 16 and ending up with three. But I guess after watching what we've watched for the last 4 months, nothing really should have shocked us here, and I think that that's probably the case after this first weekend.
Let me ask you this, since you're in Kentucky, I just kind of touch on Kentucky for a second. What does this loss, if anything, do to the program, to John Calipari? How much angst is there about this, what just happened in Indianapolis?
There is, and I don't think I'm exaggerating this, an extreme amount of angst. I think there's a whole, you're seeing Kentucky fans, you know, now they've turned their attention to the offseason recruiting, and there's talk about DJ Wagner, the number one player in 2023, and him going to Kentucky. And the general response from Kentucky fans has become, like, who cares? You know, we're going to get all this talent. Calipari is going to find a way to screw it up, is sort of what they're saying right now. And that's not all just about losing to St. Peter's. I think it's everything mounting over the last really 6-7 years. I mean, this is a Kentucky program that was the gold standard in college basketball for those first six seasons Calipari was there, from 2010 through 2015. They haven't been to a Final Four since then. They feel like they blew opportunities when they lost to Kansas State a few years ago. They feel like they had Auburn beat in 2019 in the Elite Eight. They feel like they should have beaten Carolina in 2017. And then now you've got the worst season in the history of Kentucky basketball last year. And you chalked it up to the pandemic. You said, you know, crazy things are happening. Let's move on. And you have a big-time bounce-back season this year. And then to lose in the first round to St. Peter's, something that Calipari has never done at Kentucky, never lost in the first round before, I think there's a lot of fear setting in that maybe, you know, the window is closed. Maybe he's not going to get that second national title. And Kentucky fans, if Calipari has another disappointing season next year, they're going to be out for blood. And some of them already are.
I may be thinking outside the box, because to be honest with you, I don't really know how NIL works particularly. But I kind of thought to myself, If I was a booster at Kentucky or any big school and I paid a recruit $100,000 in a deal or gave him a car in a deal or whatever, I can't take it out on the kid, but I certainly as hell can take it out on the coach if in the end it doesn't work out. Is there any added pressure given NIL for these coaches to go, you know, I'm not paying for you guys to lose to St. Peter's. I'm paying these kids to get to the Final Four.
I think there is. I think that's a very fair point. I mean, I think you're going – the coaches have always been, you know, they're the stars of college basketball, right? They're
right.
The faces. They're the people we talk about when something goes wrong, and they're the people we talk about when something goes right. And it will be interesting to see how NIL changes the game. And the really interesting thing about where Kentucky is right now is in years past, if you had a loss like this where Kentucky kind of unraveled at the end of regulation and then again in overtime, and they looked like the 15 seed in that game Friday night, you would have said, well, it's Kentucky. It's a bunch of young kids. They're 18-year-olds. They may be really talented, but they've never been on the stage before. And that wasn't the case this year. I mean, they had, in that game's key moments, they had three grad transfers, a junior and a sophomore on the floor. And you thought that Calipari had morphed, he'd adjusted to the way the game is, and it was going to be a great thing for him. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, we're trying to play by the new rules, we're trying to do, and it's still not working. So yeah, it's going to be, I think, Calipari whose head is rolling amongst the fan base and not guys like Oscar Tshiebwe and Ty Washington, even though there are these NIL things out there. But it'll be interesting to see if that changes more, the more comfortable that we get with these new rules in this new NIL era.
Looking at the games coming up in the Sweet 16, give me your thoughts on Michigan. I mean, they beat Tennessee, and Juwan Howard, this is a program that's in the Big Ten, and I know they had kind of an off year, but are they a dangerous 11? Are they overachieving here? How would you evaluate the way Michigan is going in to a Thursday slew of games that's still got a bunch of ones, twos, and threes?
I think they're absolutely a live shot here, especially in that region, and especially with that matchup in the Sweet 16. Yeah, 11 seeds, there's a history of success. They have had more success when it comes to getting to the second weekend and then doing damage there than 10 seeds or 9 seeds. You had UCLA last year making a run, Loyola Chicago right before them, VCU with Shaka Smart making it to the Final Four, George Mason, LSU. All those teams were 11 seeds and wound up crashing the Final Four. And I think Michigan, I'm not saying they're definitely going to do it, but they're absolutely a shot to make that happen, especially they have the type of physicality and I think the athleticism that can give Villanova a whole lot of problems. As solid as Villanova is, they have some physical limitations that I think they're going to run into that wind up knocking them out of the NCAA tournament, whether it's in this game or maybe against Arizona in the Elite Eight. There's no part of me that would be shocked if Michigan takes down Nova and moves on to a regional final, especially given the way that they played against a very, you know, hot and athletic Tennessee team in the round before.
And the same kind of question goes with North Carolina, too. Again, a blue blood program may not be at its best, but certainly playing well enough in this tournament. Your thoughts on the Tar Heels?
Yeah, if they can maintain this, there's no question they can beat UCLA and they can beat whoever they play. But that's kind of been – it's been Carolina's deal all season long. And I know they've become a little bit more consistent these last 3 weeks or so. But, you know, you'll see them one night and they'll look like they did this past weekend where they – you know, beat Marquette by 32 and then took out Baylor in the second game. And then they're also capable of losing to some bad teams by some wide margins. Caleb Love has been feast or famine all season long. Armando Bacot has been really, really good, but he has his limitations inside. I think that they're going to give UCLA all they want because UCLA, as impressive as they were against St. Mary's, you still got Johnny Juzang basically playing on one leg. That ankle is still very much a factor, I think. But Carolina, if they can play the way that they played that first weekend, who knows? The sky's the limit. We could be having a Bill Guthridge situation with Hubert Davis where he's taking them right to the Final Four right off the bat and kind of a surprise season.
You know, I think from even in the going down for years and years, a 15 over a 2 is still always going to be surprising. It's still always going to catch our attention. We're still going to go, hey, where does that school even exist? That kind of thing. But the reality of it is it's happening more and more. Do you find a consistent thing that these 15s are doing when they get into this stage? That, you know, there's only been 10 of them, but over the last few years, we've seen one like every year that we've had the tournament, like the last four or five. Is there a consistent thing they do? Is there a consistent trait that they have that allows them to win these games?
Yeah, I'm not sure that there is. I think this one, this one to me has been different than some of the ones in years past. I mean, last year, Ohio State, some people thought they were overseeded as a two, and they were going up against an Oral Roberts team that had the nation's leading scorer in Max Asemuth. They had Kevin O'Banner, too, who's now become a fantastic player at Texas Tech. I mean, there was talk that Ohio State was overseeded and that Oral Roberts was underseeded last year. I think you could say the same about Georgetown, Florida, Gulf Coast. There were people saying the same things about them. This one, I mean, Kentucky, the only question was whether they were going to be a two or steal that last one from Baylor. And St. Peter's, like I said, they were like 248th in adjusted offensive efficiency. They were 317th in turnover percentage. They were 317th in free throw percentage. They were 268th in two-point field goal percentage. There was nothing that said they should have been able to hang 85 points on Kentucky, a team that had not given up 85 points all season long. And then if that wasn't enough, there was also nothing that said they were going to win another game after beating Kentucky. I don't know if there was some sort of trend. I think it's just one of those things. I think you just chalk it up and say, Gene Holloway's a hell of a coach. He's probably going to do a wonderful job at Seton Hall next year. And I don't know. There was no consistency in these 15 seeds in recent years.
It's amazing to me, and I was talking about this earlier, it's one thing when these schools go, hey, we got nothing to lose. But then with, 6 or 5 minutes to go and they're still in a game, there is a lot to lose. You've shown that you can hang for 30-plus minutes of basketball with some of the best in the country. You do want to close the deal. It isn't being just playing loose the whole game. It's the way that they go, you know what, even in the tight situation where we know we can win this, that we go out and win this.
It's been remarkable to watch, particularly the St. Peter's Peacocks in those clutch situations the last two games. And I think it's a reflection of their head coach.
Yeah,
because
I do too.
If you've heard Gene Holloway, I loved his response when they talked about, going up against bigger guys, being intimidated. How have you not been into? And he's like, we got dudes from Seton Hall, from New Jersey and New York. You think we're scared of anybody? We do that. We do that to people. And I think you've seen those players reflect his mentality. After the Kentucky game, how do you stay so calm? How do you stay so cool and collective? And he's like, it's basketball. Who cares? I've been doing this my whole life. And his players, they have been the ones that have not blinked. It was Kentucky who blinked down the street. Kentucky, the craziest thing about that game to me was with under 3 minutes to go, they had the ball in a six-point lead. Whenever that's the case in the 2:15 game, you feel like order's been restored and they're going to salt that away and the 15 is just going to fade. And that wasn't the case. Gene Holloway called up incredible plays for Doug Edert, his best shooter, to get good looks. Their guards were calm with the ball. They just have not rattled. I'm not saying they're going to beat Purdue now, but if they do lose to Purdue, it's not going to be because the moment's too big for them.
Absolutely. Mike, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Hope to catch up with you down the road.
Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. Mike Rutherford, Card Chronicle, on some basketball. And I'm glad he was in the state and really could feel what the situation was. Again, it's one thing to be a two and lose. I get it. A bunch of them, Ohio State and Georgetown, and it was Michigan State and South Carolina years ago in the 90s. I think Arizona was a two, lost to Steve Nash in Santa Clara. But Kentucky as a two, it's a whole different ball game. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Mike Rutherford for talking some college basketball. Again, it'll be a couple of in the end, do you think we'll end up with a surprising Final Four? Do you think it'll be Gonzaga, Duke, Arizona? Do you think any of these North Carolina, Michigans, Ohio, Iowa States get in this thing?
No,
or do you think...
I don't. But I do think it wouldn't even be a surprising seed because I do think they were misseeded. But I do think Houston
capable
of getting to the Final Four.
I agree completely.
And so that might be your highest seed, I believe.
Right.
But yeah, I'm not sitting there. I don't think Michigan's going to get by Villanova.
I don't think so either. By the way, did you see the video of Juwan Howard consoling Kennedy?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my God. That was so heartwarming. So good of Juwan Howard to do that. When the last thing we saw of Juwan Howard was him punching a coach.
Yeah.
No, those are really like Chandler Kennedy is, you know, he broke down. I mean, he was on a great team.
No, and you know, for a lot of these guys, I mean, it's so gut wrenching when you can see it in their face, you can see it in his face that's his last game in college.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
And, you know, I mean, maybe going into it, they thought maybe they had a chance of going all the way.
You know, that's the thing people kind of forget. Like, when you're 18, 19, 21, 21, like, you want to think, like, you take every game seriously and you don't take anything for granted. But sometimes you do. Sometimes when you're young, you believe your own hype a little bit. You think, like, we're really good. We're probably going to win a national championship. We're probably going to the Final Four. And here's an 11 Michigan team, and even though they wear Michigan on their shirt, you probably think, well, they haven't done really well this year. And then you go, oh, they just beat us, and now it's over. It's over.
Everything.
I'm not playing basketball anymore. And you're not really prepared at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, maybe if you get to the Final Four, you're prepared for, like, okay, if we lose, it's over. But you're certainly, if you're Tennessee, you don't think round two is where it's going to come to an end. Even though last year it was round one where it came to an end. But I was glad to see Juwan Howard console him because that kid was a wreck. He was a wreck. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your day. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, Sports Map Radio.